Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo. And along with Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists, it is my pleasure to introduce you to the music we'll be hearing as part of Music at Menlo's 2011 season, Through Brahms. This season, Music at Menlo illuminates the historical magnitude of the music of Johannes Brahms. Brahms represents the zenith of the Viennese classical tradition, a tradition cultivated throughout the 18th and 19th centuries by a hallowed lineage of composers, beginning with Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Brahms's earliest works immediately drew comparisons with the greatest of his predecessors. Upon his arrival in Vienna, the musical community quickly proclaimed him the heir of Beethoven. Brahms built on the model of his forebears to create a distinct and powerful voice. He embraced centuries of tradition as a pathway to new and genuine artistic expression. Along the way, he created some of history's greatest chamber music. And in forging such a towering body of work, which no musician has since been able to ignore, Brahms has continued to inspire the most forward-looking composers of the 20th and 21st centuries. This summer features a series of six main concert programs highlighting different facets of Brahms's artistry. These are complemented by a two-concert presentation of the Brahms string quartets, the festival's Carte Blanche concert series of artist-curated recitals, and our Signature Encounters series, which, along with audio notes, provide thorough context to the festival's many concert offerings. We're glad to have you with us for what promises to be another exciting season at Music at Menlo. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
When Brahms first played his compositions for Robert and Clara Schumann in 1853, Robert Schumann wrote that at Brahms's hands, the piano became, quote, an orchestra of lamenting and loudly jubilant voices, end quote, making his chamber works sound like veiled symphonies. This summer's third concert program is anchored by one such veiled symphony, the Opus 18 String Sextet, a work of sweeping grandeur and orchestral breadth. Though romantic in expression, the sextet also betrays Brahms's reverence for the Baroque and classical traditions. The Trio Sonata from Bach's A Musical Offering, and Vivaldi's piquant variations on the ancient melody La Folia, reflect this dimension of Brahms's artistic identity. At the center of the program is Clara Schumann's Piano Trio, a deeply felt work by the object of Brahms's most complicated affections.
In 1747, J.S. Bach visited the court of Frederick the Great. Frederick was widely hailed as an enlightened monarch and a devoted patron of the arts. A talented flautist and composer himself, Frederick installed an excellent roster of musicians at the Prussian court, including Bach's son, the composer Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, and undertook to revitalize German musical life at large. It was Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach who brokered his father's visit to Frederick's court. Bach's reputation as a great theoretician and contrapuntalist preceded him, to say the least. Upon the occasion of his visit, Bach was given a difficult theme composed by the king, hence known as the King's Theme, T to improvise on at the keyboard. Bach rose to the occasion, and then some. 2 months later, he published The Musical Offering, a collection of various compositions based on the King's theme, which he dedicated to Frederick the Great. The complete work comprises a 3-part Richerkar, a 6-part Richerkar, 10 canons, and a 4-movement trio sonata for violin and flute, presumably in tribute to Frederick's flute playing. Concert Program 3 begins with the trio sonata, subtitled Sonata sopra il soggetto reale, or Sonata on the King's Theme. Following the slow, stately opening movement, Bach writes a piquant allegro. About midway through the movement, Bach deftly weaves the King's thorny theme into the sonata's florid texture. Elements of the King's theme are embedded and ornamented throughout the rest of the trio sonata, if less obviously so. Indeed, much of the work's delight lies in sleuthing for the theme amidst Bach's ravishing contrapuntal writing.
The program also features a trio sonata by another undisputed master of the Baroque period, Antonio Vivaldi. Whereas the trio sonata from Bach's musical offering takes a theme especially composed by Frederick the Great as its source material, Vivaldi's trio sonata No. 12 in D minor, the final sonata of the composer's Opus 1, is based on a traditional European melody, La Folia. Following the introductory statement of the theme, the sonata comprises a set of 19 variations on the La Folia melody. Thank you. true to Vivaldi's stature as one of the finest violinists of his generation and one of the Baroque period's great innovators in violin composition, each variation offers a display of dazzling virtuosity.
No study of the musical life of Johannes Brahms can ignore the importance of Clara Schumann. Like her husband Robert, Clara Schumann became a close friend and mentor figure to Brahms, but their relationship was colored by the added complication of Brahms' irrepressible amorous feelings for Clara, 14 years his senior. While it is unclear whether his feelings were ever reciprocated, Clara's faithfulness to her husband, even after his death, made any such question moot. Regardless, their friendship would sustain both Brahms and Clara Schumann for the rest of their lives, and the dynamic between them would forever be warm, fraught with ambiguity, and, above all else, centered on their shared musical values.
What we do know is that the relationship between Clara and Johannes Brahms was a very special one and troubled at the same time.
Cellist Eric Kim.
I think what was very difficult was finding a way to communicate with each other. The thing that pops into my mind when you say Brahms with Clara Schumann is when he wrote his first piano concerto and the slow movement, probably the most beautiful thing you'll ever hear in your life. And he wrote Clara and said, "I'm painting a picture of you right now." I mean, how more romantic can you get? So I think in his efforts to show his love, a lot of it came through his composition. Because I think it wasn't so easy to just, hey, let's go grab a burger, you know? I mean, you really couldn't do that so much. And especially with the troubles of Robert.
Clara Schumann was universally regarded in her lifetime as one of her generation's most gifted pianists. Though somewhat less recognized as a composer, she was nevertheless respectably accomplished in this regard as well, and might have left behind a more substantial body of work had she lived in more modern times. As it was, her compositional pursuits necessarily took a back seat to her husband's, and even in her career as a concert pianist, Clara primarily established herself as a leading interpreter of Robert Schumann's piano music. Nevertheless, the music that she did produce demonstrates impeccable technique and a strong personal voice. Clara Schumann's complete catalog comprises a piano concerto, three romances for violin and piano, a modest catalog of songs and solo piano music, and the piano trio in G minor, opus 17. The piano trio demonstrates that, though meager in quantity, Clara Schumann's music exhibits a depth of expression equal to her husband's most moving works.
The Clara Schumann Trio for me is a very expressive piece, but not only reminiscent of her husband, Robert Schumann, but also of herself. She definitely has her own voice.
Violinist Yura Lee.
Well, this trio, it has rarely a moment of, let's say, a climax or a strength in terms of character. There's no character of violence or extreme. It's everything is very within a certain frame, and not only in the dynamic of the piece, which she keeps it within a certain structure. The very first thing you'll hear is a fifth down from a D to the G, and it's kind of reminiscent for me of the Clara theme in the Robert Schumann string quartet number 3, for example. yom. And this trio starts with my part, the violin part, going yom. So in a way, this is purely a guess, but maybe she is hinting that a bit of her own identity, perhaps. Minuet movement has a lot of elegance that you cannot find so much in Robert Schumann's music. It's very, in a way, it's very quaint, and I hate to put, you know, the woman composer as the elegant, quaint one, but it really is. This piece is very small scale, but in a very elegant way. And the colors are very pastel. It's not red, blue, you know, but it's very like impressionistic in a way.
The deep love shared by Robert and Clara Schumann provides a constant theme throughout each of their compositional outputs. Just as Clara served as Robert's muse, especially in his writing for the piano, Clara's adoration of her husband manifests itself in her most tender music. The slow movement of the piano trio can easily be heard as the love-struck utterance of a young romantic dreamingly gazing at her beloved. The piano's gentle melody grows into an amorous dialogue between the soprano voice of the violin and the baritone register of the cello. It is not too much of a stretch to imagine this as a love duet between Robert and Clara. The trio concludes with a moody allegretto.
Scholars widely recognize the end of the 1850s and early 1860s as Brahms's first maturity. It was in this period of his career that the composer was able to fully assimilate the influence of such predecessors as Bach, Beethoven, and Schubert into his own distinct compositional voice. Scholar George Bozart writes as follows, quote, Brahms' study of his musical heritage now encompassed both the larger forms and the short popular dances of Schubert. In instrumental music, the imaginative Liszt-ian thematic transformations that had animated and unified the highly romantic early piano sonatas were replaced by a balance of emotional and intellectual elements achieved through motivic and thematic projection. Bold tonal shifts and large climaxes are reminiscent of Beethoven, but long evolving melodies and major minor inflections recall Schubert. Ländler rhythms and folk music drones at times introduce a popular element. The style Brahms developed during this period is in evidence for the rest of his career. End quote. The numerous outstanding chamber works that mark this period include the work that closes Concert Program 3, the Sextet in B-flat major, Opus 18.
Brahms famously delayed composing his first symphony until his mid-40s, citing the forbidding sound of Beethoven's footsteps behind him. Likewise, Brahms did not publish his first string quartet until 1873, during the period of his first maturity, as Brahms biographer Jan Swafford writes, quote, "String sextet was a characteristic choice of medium, partly because it sidestepped his apprehensions. In the 1860s, Brahms concentrated on fresher, acoustically richer, more nearly orchestral chamber mediums that happened to be less thunderous with the tramp of giants." End quote. Indeed, the B-flat sextet rings with a grand sonority, affirming what Robert Schumann heard in the young Brahms' chamber writing as veiled symphonies.
Cellist Eric Kim.
The piece starts with cello. And it's a beautiful theme that comes throughout the movement. First movement has a lot of interaction between the string parts. At the end of the cello solo, it trades to the violin, first violin, and as you go throughout, it's just this exploration of these interactions between the solo parts.
In a letter to Clara Schumann written around this time, Brahms declared, quote, "Passions are not natural to mankind. They are always exceptions or excrescences. The ideal, genuine man is calm in joy and calm in pain and sorrow." End quote. Perhaps drawing from the idyllic setting of Detmold, the quiet forest town where Brahms was working when he began the sextet, a sense of stillness permeates the music. Even when Brahms writes a waltz into the first movement, it is less in the spirit of salon gaiety than pastoral serenity.
There are times where the first three parts will play against the two parts, the second violin, viola, and cello parts. For some reason, he really chose to have this difference between the first parts and the second parts.
second violin, cello, and violas have a very clear supporting role where they're filling in the harmony or the textures, and very seldom they have a leader role in terms of where the phrase should head or where the melody should go. But in the later works, it's all kind of combined, and without one voice, the other voice cannot survive. But it's not so much the case, at least for me, in the sextets. It's very clear first and second, and it's very organized in a way, and it's great writing.
The second movement is a set of variations on the same traditional melody, La Folia, on which Vivaldi based his Trio Sonata No. 12 in D minor, Opus 1. Brahms sets the first elegiac statement of the theme in the viola.
The second movement is a theme and variations. Incredible, very wide variety of what you get musically, emotionally, and great tunes for the viola. Amazing theme. Comes back later, much more elaborate. Cello gets an incredible theme. Funny, the first violin to me in this piece doesn't feel as prominent as it does in so many other of Brahms' chamber music works. I mean, to me, it feels much more like a cello and viola piece.
And at the end, one of the variations for a brief second has like a sunshine to it. It turns into a major, and that's one of the glorious moments of this piece. And then it, again, goes right back to minor and kind of dies away. And in the third movement, it's very rustic, dance-like. It actually, when you look at the whole piece, the third movement happens so fast. It's almost like a tiny glimpse of a celebration. And then the fourth movement again goes back to the lyrical quality of the piece. And in the middle, there's a section where it's minor and it's reminiscent of the second movement of the sort of processional insistent quality. But it's always very, if you were to describe it as like a scenery, it's always a wide open field without too many trees, and it's just endless kind of singing quality to the whole piece. The strange thing about the fourth movement is that it never gains a sort of a speed momentum until the very, very, very end.
You just get so much great variety in each movement, and it's not a small work. It's probably 38 minutes, and it feels like you've really completed a journey, though, when you've finished.
Audio notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following performers and organizations. Johannes Brahms's Opus 18 Sextet, performed by the Raphael Ensemble, and Robert Schumann's Spanische Liebeslieder, performed by Geraldine McGreevy, Stefan Loges, Stella Dufessy, Adrian Thompson, Graham Johnson, and Stephen Huff, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Antonio Vivaldi's Trio Sonata La Follia, performed by Daniel Hope, and Johannes Brahms's Liebeslieder Waltzes, performed by Edith Mathis, Brigitte Fassbender, Peter Schreier, Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau, Karl Engel, and Wolfgang Sawallisch, appear with kind permission of Deutsche Grammophon GmbH Hamburg, www.deutschegrammophon.com. The Trio Sonata from Bach's A Musical Offering is performed by Joshua Smith, and appears courtesy of Delos Music. For more information, please visit www.delosmusic.com. Clara Schumann's Piano Trio, performed by Juho Pohonien, Jura Lee, and Andreas Brantelid, and Alban Berg's Piano Sonata Opus 1, performed by Alessio Bax, and Seven Early Songs, performed by Claren McFadden and Gilbert Kalish, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. The Ricercar from Johann Sebastian Bach's A Musical Offering, performed by the St. Lawrence String Quartet, Arno Sussman, Dennis Godburn, and Scott Pingle. Franz Schubert's An die Musik, performed by Christopher Nomura and Derek Hahn. And Robert Schumann's Dichterliebe, performed by Christopher Nomura and Gilbert Kalish, appear courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Johannes Brahms's two songs, Opus 91, are performed by and appear courtesy of Sasha Cook. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.